Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to unpack the core ideas from really fascinating sources, basically giving you a shortcut to getting genuinely well-informed. Today, we're taking a deep dive into something pretty critical, leadership. Specifically, looking at why some teams, some companies, really thrive while others just seem, well, crippled by internal conflict. We're drawing a lot from Simon Sinek's work here, trying to answer that basic question. Why do some organizations pull together and others just fall apart? And what strikes me right away from the research is the focus on the leader's duty. Okay, yeah, sure, being the boss has its perks, bigger office, maybe a bigger paycheck, more control, all that stuff. But the sources we looked at are really clear. That position, it comes with one massive non-negotiable obligation. And that's looking after every single person on the team. The leader's basically like, solely responsible for whether people are happy and, you know, whether the company actually succeeds or fails.
Yeah, it's a fundamental trade-off, isn't it? Power for responsibility. And it feels like, well, a lot of modern leadership has kind of lost sight of that bargain. So our mission today for you listening is to get past the usual surface level chat about management styles. We really want to dig into the why, what are the human drivers? We need to explore the biology, actually, the specific chemical mechanisms that great leaders have to understand and manage, frankly, to build that environment of trust where people actually rely on each other.
Yeah.
It really comes down to managing brain chemistry.
Okay, brain chemistry. Let's get into this chemical cocktail then, because it sounds like where the science really tells us what to do strategy-wise. So to build that winning culture, leaders need to balance, what is it, two kinds of chemicals, the selfish ones and the selfless ones.
That's right.
And the big hurdle seems to be that modern business, you know, all that focus on competition, quarterly results, it naturally pushes the selfish side, which kind of undermines the trust you need internally.
Exactly. It actively works against it sometimes. So yeah, we've got five key chemicals that really drive how we act and react at work. Let's break them down. First up, the two selfish chemicals. Now, these aren't necessarily bad. They helped us get things done, but they're purely focused on, well, individual achievement. You've got endorphins. Think of them as nature's painkiller, basically. It's what lets a marathon runner just keep going, push through that physical wall.
And then there's dopamine. Ah, dopamine. That's the reward chemical. It gives you that hit of satisfaction, that yes feeling when you finish a task, hit a deadline, reach a goal you set for yourself.
Right. That dopamine hit is strong. Like if I smash my sales target, I feel amazing.
Yeah.
Individually. But the warning from the sources is if you focus only on that or too much on it, then my personal needs, my desire for that hit can start to overshadow the team's goals. It becomes all about me getting the reward, not us winning together. Precisely. And that is exactly why truly effective leadership means actively, consciously stimulating the other set of chemicals, the selfless ones, the ones that make teamwork actually feel good. There are two main ones here. First is serotonin. This is often called the leadership chemical or the status chemical.
Yay.
It's that feeling of pride, of confidence you get when you feel respected or admired by others, when your contribution is acknowledged by the group.
Okay, so dopamine is the buzz I get when I hit my target. But serotonin is the feeling when, say, my boss publicly says, hey, great job hitting that target. And I feel that respect for my colleagues. That's the difference.
That's a perfect way to put it. Serotonin builds stability and trust through mutual respect and status within the group. Then you have oxytocin. This is the big one for connection. It's the chemical of friendship, trust, love, empathy. It makes us feel bonded. It drives us to be kind, to be generous, to help each other out. It makes cooperation feel natural, easy even. Oxytocin is basically the glue for that circle of safety we need to talk about.
Okay, selfish, selfless. And then there's one more, right? The disruptor. Cortisol.
Ah, yes. Cortisol.
There's the stress one. Mm. Fear, panic, fight or flight. Are the sources saying that a lot of modern workplaces are kind of running on cortisol? Like, biologically built on fear?
In many cases, unfortunately, yes. The research is pretty blunt about it. A huge number of employees today are dealing with chronic cortisol overload. They're stressed about layoffs, worried about getting fired, feeling constant pressure from management. And that sustained stress, it's terrible for your health, obviously, but it also makes creative thinking, problem solving, effective work almost impossible. So the key insight really is that a leader's job isn't just assigning tasks. It's actively managing this whole chemical balance. It's about deliberately fostering serotonin and oxytocin.
Which also means shifting the whole company focus.
Right.
Away from just hitting the numbers for the market and back towards protecting the actual people doing the work. And that brings us nicely to this idea of long-term stability versus, you know, chasing short-term profits. It feels like Maybe companies used to get this better. That focus on positive human connection was more central. Now, it seems the main driver so often is just keeping shareholders happy quarter by quarter, even if it burns out the employees.
And what's really fascinating, or maybe ironic, is that this relentless focus on short-term, often fear-driven results actually seems to undermine long-term success. You can see this really clearly when you compare different leadership philosophies. Let's take Jack Welch at GE, famous CEO. His approach, purely focused on boosting profits, juicing that share price. And his famous tactic was firing or managing out the bottom 10% of managers every single year.
Wow. Just hearing that sounds stressful. That creates an environment dripping in cortisol, right?
Mm-hmm.
And pushing those selfish chemicals. People must have been terrified to make a mistake, probably competing ruthlessly just to keep their job.
Absolutely. Constant fear. But let's be honest, that kind of thinking, maybe not that extreme, but that pressure for quarterly results is pretty common in publicly traded companies, isn't it? It takes real guts, real conviction for a leader to stand up to shareholders demanding those immediate results and say, no, we're investing in our people for the long haul. How do the sources say they manage that pressure?
Well, the contrast is stark. Look at someone like James Sinegal at Costco. His entire focus was the opposite. Employees first.
Cool.
Always. He saw them as the source of profit, not line item cost. He genuinely treated them like family. And the classic example everyone points to is 2009. Middle of a huge economic downturn. What did Sinegal do? While everyone else was cutting costs, laying people off, he gave his staff raises to help them cope.
Yeah.
That is an investment in oxytocin and trust. That pays back for years. Decades even.
Incredible courage. But what about the bottom line? Did it actually work financially? Because that's what the skeptics will ask.
Oh, it worked. Here are the numbers, roughly. Yeah. Between 1986 and 2013, GE stock, it grew about 600%, which sounds pretty good, right?
Yeah, not bad at all.
But Costco, in that same period, their stock grew 1,200%, double. And maybe just as importantly, GE's growth was all over the place. Big spikes, big crashes, driven by market sentiment, maybe fear. Costco's growth. Smooth, steady, sustainable. By putting his people first, Sinegal got incredible loyalty, dedication, and ultimately far superior, more stable financial returns.
So the argument is, happy, secure employees aren't just nice to have, they're actually a more reliable, more valuable engine for profit than people motivated purely by fear.
It seems undeniable when you look at it like that. Okay, so putting people first is key. But it's not just about being nice, is it? It's also about empowering them. The sources stress that leaders have to actually give away some control, some decision-making power. Because people do their best work when they feel like what they do matters, when they have the agency, the status, to actually make a difference.
Right, empowerment. Which sounds great in theory, but how do you actually do that? Especially if you've got a culture where people are just used to being told what to do, just following orders. There's this amazing story about Captain David Marquet on the nuclear submarine, the USS Santa Fe. When he took over, morale was apparently terrible. Rock bottom, the crew, they just did what they were told. No initiative, just waited for commands.
Yeah, I remember reading about that. And that incident during the drill, just terrifying. Marquet gives an order, something technically impossible for the sub to do.
Navigation command, yeah.
And the officer of the deck just repeats it, doesn't question it. And when Marquet asks him, why would you repeat an order you know is wrong? What did he say?
The reply was chilling. Because you told me to.
Wow.
That response just sums up a broken system, right? A crew so disempowered they felt they couldn't even speak up to prevent a potentially disastrous mistake. The captain's word was absolute. Even when wrong.
So that was the wake-up call for Marquet. He totally flipped the script. He moved from what he called permission-based leadership, where everyone waits for the leader's okay, to intent-based leadership.
Exactly. He stopped giving specific orders. Instead, he communicated his intent, the goal, and then he made sure everyone, down the line, had the training, the knowledge, the authority to figure out the best way to achieve that intent. He basically made everyone a leader responsible for their piece of the puzzle. He gave up control, but gained capability.
And by doing that, he's triggering serotonin,
yeah.
Right? Giving them status, responsibility, respect.
Precisely. Real empowerment. And the results were apparently dramatic. The Santa Fe went from being the worst performing sub to like a model of efficiency. People wanted to serve on that boat because they knew their skills mattered. They had agency. They were trusted.
So the practical advice here for you listening isn't necessarily about running a submarine, but it's about finding ways to delegate real authority. Let someone else run the weekly team meeting sometimes. Give someone the budget for a small project and let them manage it. Hand over the keys to the supply closet, even.
Yeah, even small acts of delegation, giving control over something tangible, it sends a powerful message of trust. it boosts that serotonin, boosts engagement.
Okay, so we empower the team.
Mm.
But leaders also need to watch out for something the sources call abstraction. What's that about?
Abstraction is basically what happens when leaders get too far removed from the actual work and the actual people. They start seeing everything as numbers on a spreadsheet, data points on a chart.
And they lose that human connection.
Exactly. Technology doesn't always help here, either endless emails, instant messages, reports, plus managers often being physically separate in their own offices. It all makes it easier to forget you're leading people, not just managing resources.
And that leads to decisions that might look good on paper, but are actually terrible for morale, for the human beings involved.
Right. So fighting abstraction is critical. Leaders need to consciously, actively reconnect their teams and themselves to the real-world impact of the work, and also reconnect people to each other.
How do you do that? The sources mention inspiring through impact, like that Wells Fargo example.
Yeah, that was powerful. They apparently brought in actual customers who talked about how getting a loan from Wells Fargo had genuinely changed their lives for the better.
Okay, so suddenly you're not just processing loan applications. You're helping someone achieve a dream, start a business, buy a home. It gives the work meaning beyond just the task itself.
Exactly. Leaders need to make that positive impact real for people. Share positive customer feedback, specific stories, not just ratings. Offer chances to volunteer, maybe. Connect the daily grind to a larger purpose.
That makes sense. What about connecting people to each other? Fighting the isolation?
Yeah, that's the other key piece, building those oxytocin bonds. The sources suggest a few practical things here. First, keep groups to a human scale. There's anthropological research suggesting we function best, maintain strong bonds, in groups of around, say, 100 to 150 people, Dunbar's number, basically. If your company's bigger, you need to create smaller, tighter teams or units where people can really know each other.
Interesting. Okay, what else?
Second, pretty obvious but often overlooked, get people together face-to-face regularly. Weekly team meetings, maybe some social activities. Make sure there are communal spaces like break rooms where people actually bump into each other. You need that physical interaction to build real connection, especially now with so much remote work.
Right. Fight the screen fatigue.
Third, actually get to know your staff as individuals. Spend time just chatting with people in different departments. Ask about their families, their hobbies, what they did on the weekend. Show you see them as a whole person, not just an employee ID number. That builds massive trust.
And fourth.
Fourth. Offer your time, not just your money or instructions. Your personal attention is incredibly valuable. Meet with people directly. Really listen when they bring concerns. Give them your full focus. Put the phone away. Don't just rely on emails filtered through an assistant. Showing you genuinely care enough to listen, that's huge for building trust.
Which brings us to the final piece, the absolute foundation, integrity.
Mm.
Trust. It seems so basic, but it underpins everything. Customers stick with companies they trust. And employees. They're loyal to leaders they trust. And that trust, it demands absolute integrity, constant honesty.
Yeah, and interestingly, that trust often gets tested and proven, not when things are easy, but when things go really wrong. There's a compelling case study about Ralph Lauren back in 2013. It turned out their subsidiary in Argentina had been bribing government officials, trying to speed up shipments, get around regulations, that kind of thing.
Oh boy. Okay, the easy path there, especially for a big corporation, would be damage control, right?
Right.
Fire the local guys, maybe issue a vague apology, try to sweep it under the rug.
Absolutely. That would be the standard playbook for many. But Ralph Lauren's leadership, they did the opposite. They themselves went to the authorities. They reported the bribery, they cooperated fully, didn't fight the penalties, and ended up paying over $1 million in fines.
Wow. They basically chose integrity over protecting the bottom line in the short term.
Precisely. They sacrificed immediate financial gain and probably faced some public embarrassment to demonstrate that their company's values, their integrity, actually meant something. That sends an incredibly powerful message through the entire organization. It tells every single employee, we do the right thing here, even when it's hard, even when it costs us. That builds profound trust.
So the advice for you listening is pretty straightforward, really. Be honest, always. Even when the news is bad, like talking about performance issues or, heaven forbid, layoffs, be transparent. Hold regular meetings where people can actually ask questions, raise concerns, encourage that open communication.
Yeah.
Because when people trust you, when they feel safe telling the truth, that's when you get those oxytocin bonds. That's when you get loyalty and people willing to go the extra mile.
So if you pull all these threads together, what's the leader's ultimate job? It's creating what Sinek calls the circle of safety. It's building an environment where people feel secure, psychologically safe. where they know the leader has their back, that they're valued as people, not just cogs in a machine. And when you have that safety, that's when the magic happens. Innovation flourishes, cooperation becomes natural, people take smart risks, and the whole company benefits. It comes back to those core ideas. Mm-hmm. Focus on the people, empower them to act, fight that abstraction, and always, always lead with integrity.
And the payoff for that investment, the time, the effort, the courage it takes to put people first is huge. You get dedication, loyalty, performance levels you just can't achieve through fear or short-term incentives. So here's the final thought for you to take away and maybe mull over this week. Thinking about empowerment, about boosting that serotonin, what's one small piece of control, one decision, one task that you're holding on to right now that you could actually give away to someone on your team this week? Just one thing to make them feel trusted and empowered. Maybe go try it.
Until next time, keep diving deep.